The following is for information purposes only and does not necessarily represent the views and opinions of News Radio 680 WPTF and the Curtis Media Group.
FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF News, Talk and Traffic. Derwin Maness, whose name I have been mispronouncing since the dawn of time. I am sorry.
No problem.
You are Derwin, right? I mean, I got that part right. Okay, good. He thumbs up, he says. All right, of Roofworks. Where's Holly?
Holly is on a little vacation. She deserves it. So
she does. In enthusiasm alone, she deserves like 0.5 extra vacation days than everybody else.
We'll keep that in mind.
She's given 110% every day. So we talk about heat, and we got some today. I'm fairly sure it's going to get, you know, roasty over the next couple of weeks and for the rest of the summer. Does this have an effect on a modern shingle?
Well, really, shingles are designed to take the heat. It's the ventilation. And, you know, we talk on the show. Holly talks on the show. When I'm here, we talk about ventilation.
Yeah.
And ventilation, you know, if you don't have proper ventilation, it will really affect the shingle. It'll also affect how your house is cooled. So, yes, heat does have an effect on the shingles.
Right.
But if you are properly ventilated, then no, your shingles should sustain the heat. You don't want to be up there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for our guys that work in the field, they have to endure some tremendous heat. So a day like today, when they're working on the roof, that roof temperature at the surface is about 145 degrees. So it's tremendously hot. And so that's part of the business that we're in roofing. It is very hot. So if you imagine that surface 145 degrees, that's taking a lot of stress on roofing. And in the climate we're in, Dave, you know, we have a lot of stress that is on shingles just simply because, take November, for instance.
Yeah.
In November, it can be, one day it could be 75 degrees.
Yes.
And then the next day, it could get close to freezing temperatures.
Yeah.
We have that drastic. So that is what really stresses out a shingle.
When a shingle is warm or hot, it has a lot of flexibility.
It's much more pliable.
Much more pliable. On the other hand, when it gets cold, it becomes more brittle.
Yes. It's more rigid. Yes. And so in our climate, it's more of a experience, knowing that shingles get put through a lot more stress because of heat and cool. They cool down quicker. They heat up quicker in our climate.
Right.
You know, there's not that slow burn, so to speak. It doesn't take, you know, it can take, like I said, I use November as an example because November can be 75 degrees, and then we can have a very cool night. And then warm right back up on us.
Oh, yeah. So. Now, a modern shingle should be able to take it, right?
Yes.
But I'm wondering forget about warranty and guarantee for a moment. What's the reasonable length? Avoiding windstorms and avoiding hail, what's the reasonable length that a brand new roof should last in years?
Again, get into this warranty talk, so we want to avoid that, and you just want to know, how long is my shingle going to last?
Yeah, my dad kept his three-tab shingles on his house for 30 years. Now, I'm not saying there weren't leaks. There were leaks, and he paid for them. But can I expect 30 years out of a shingle?
You should get 30 years out of your shingles.
Yeah.
Now, the warranty and on that shingle is actually, you know, unless it is a three tab, if you're putting on an architectural shingle, it is a 50-year warranty on that product.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's 50 years. Now, it's a limited lifetime warranty, excuse me, but it is a 50-year warranted product.
See, at the end of its life, let's 49 years in. What am I going to – am I going to get a prorated version? I assume. I mean, I know my insurance company would prorate everything if they could. They would give me a tenth of what I paid 49 years ago.
Well, you know, that's the thing that we – that's a whole other topic. We get into the insurance company and replacing roofs, which if you compared it to your car, they prorate your car. They don't give you a brand new car if you have that. But with a roof, they give you a brand new roof at today's cost.
Yeah.
If there is wind or hail damage to
it. Right.
Even though that roof could be 28 years old.
Yeah.
So they, an insurance company treats it different. They do not prorate it. Now, the manufacturer does prorate it.
Right.
That makes sense?
So if I'm trying to cash in, quote-unquote cash in, on a 49-year warranty. The roof's 49 years old. I'm not getting a brand-new roof free from some company that made it 49 years ago.
Yes, and I'd be impressed that you had your warranty and everything in hand. So.
In the paper?
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. That'd be great.
I mean, when I bought my home, they put everything in a folder. I don't know whether everybody gets this. But the manufacturer, the builder, made a big book of warranties and types of shingles and what is the paint on your wall and all this. And it included the warranties on the roof, which is a wonderful thing. We're never throwing that book out. We're just keeping that thing. But let's talk about before we get, we're going to circle back to warranties and guarantees. We definitely are. I had a door knocker this week. You're philosophically against door knocking, knocking on people's doors, even in a hail neighborhood, a neighborhood that's gotten some storms. Tell me why.
Well, I can sort of relate a personal story that was shared with me this week.
Yeah.
One of my neighbors came up to me and said, they had had, he might have been exaggerating, but he said, I've had 20 plus people knock on our door over, you know, over the last year.
Yeah.
And said, let me look at your roof. You've had hail damage in your neighborhood, the neighborhood I live in.
Yeah.
And he said, and he was very gracious, very nice about our company. And, you know, very, he said, I'm not going with anybody but you guys.
Yeah.
You guys have come out, evaluated our roof, said our roof doesn't need to be replaced, done some small repairs for us, been very honest about it. And he said, but these people have been relentless knocking on our door.
Yeah.
And he said that they said, let me get up on your roof. And he said, I told him, no, nobody's getting on my roof without me contacting my insurance. And we preach that just simply because people will get on your roof and create damage.
Yeah.
And you say, well, no, they wouldn't get up there and do anything to create damage. But it's very simple for them to do some minor things that an adjuster typically will take the word of a roofer. Because do you want to get up on a 2-3-story roof?
Nope.
Do you want to crawl all over that roof? No.
No.
And if they do get up there, they usually have to have assistance, meaning that roofing company has to assist them.
Yes. Yes.
And so they get up there and some shingles, let's say one of the popular things now is wind, saying that, you know, there's been wind damage.
Yeah.
Well, you created wind damage by lifting shingles. Well, that's fraud.
Right.
And at the end of the day, if you're committing fraud, you're very dishonest.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not very, you are. You know, there's no gray line.
And these guys don't care.
No, and a lot of the times, unfortunately, a lot of these guys are being taught that, and they're very new in the industry.
Yeah.
They're young guys, and they're probably just being taught that this is how we operate as a company.
Yeah.
And they don't know any better. Now, maybe they figure it out that this is not right, but, you know, you take a young guy and tell him this is what you do. You get up there, you examine the roof, and you lift shingles, and you tell the homeowner that, and so that's his job description.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hate to be just brutal about it, but that's what goes on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look, if there is a storm and people have legitimate damage, we are going to do insurance work.
Yes.
We're glad to do it.
Yes.
But when it isn't, it isn't.
Yeah. And in my neighborhood, Holly was happy to hear this. Our HOA agreed to put a no soliciting sign in the front of the neighborhood. And it's a large cul-de-sac, so there's no, you know, no getting into the neighborhood without seeing that sign. And they drive on past it, and they park their car, and they go from house to house. And when they come to my house, I tell them three or four things. I have a pest control company. I've considered and rejected solar. I have found Jesus. And I know about roofworks, right?
You got your bases covered.
I got my bases covered. I stop them right there so that we don't go any farther. And that's what people have to do, is just tell people, listen, I don't know what you're selling, but we as a company, we as a neighborhood decided not to buy from you guys because I'm not getting off my comfy chair every 15 minutes because you guys feel like marketing this way.
Right.
So, all right. We're with Derwin Maness of Roofworks on Making Your Home Great, FM 98.5 AM 680 WPTF. FM 98.5 AM 680 WPTF, Making Your Home Great. Also news, talk, and traffic, and all that stuff. Derwin Maness of Roofworks is here, and we are talking about roofs. And what did we decide we're going to talk about this segment? We're going to talk about...
You wanted to ask about jobs and certain specialty jobs we're doing.
Tell me about a job you've done recently.
Well, actually, I'll tell you about a job that we're pretty excited about that we're in the process of doing. It looks like we're going to be doing it maybe late summer.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, we like these kind of projects. It's a clay tile job. And we're going to be removing the existing clay tile. That job, that house, the tile on it's been on over 100 years.
Right.
And generally, when we do a job like that, I'll give a brief description. A lot of times we're able to take that tile off,
right,
store it on the ground on pallets, palletize it, replace all the, you know, if there is rotten decking, we put new decking down, and then we put all new underlayment, all new copper flashing, put everything back, and then put the old tile back on because the old tile is still good.
Sure.
This is a unique situation where that tile had been damaged because people had been walking on it in so many different places and crushed it, and it was and you can't find that tile. You can't procure that tile anywhere.
Right.
It's non-existent anymore.
Well, how do you work around that?
Well, in this situation, the homeowner wants to go back with a old-looking rustic tile, so we're buying a new tile, Ludovici tile, that looks like it's been on for 100 years.
Really?
Yeah, so it's really unique. The tile is going to be brand new, clay tile, and that tile will last... It'll last 150 years plus, but it looks like it's been on. It actually has indentions in it. It has, if it was sitting here in front of us, you would say, that doesn't look good. But once you see it on the whole roof laid out, it looks beautiful, but it looks like it's been on for 100 years.
They added what the antique people call patina.
Yes, it looks weathered, and it really is going to be a beautiful roof. And then you're putting all new, we're putting all new copper chimney caps, a couple brand new copper bay windows, and then a side porch that will have standing seam copper on it.
Wow.
So it's going to be a beautiful project, and we'll add that to our picture portfolio on our website when we have it done, and probably, you know, as we go, pictures of the process.
We should mention that Roofworks will do all sorts of commercial jobs.
Sure.
We don't talk enough about it, but, you know, you flat roofs, you'll do how many different types of roofing?
Well, like right now, that's another thing, talking about projects. We've been doing William Honeycutt's our coating guru, and we've been doing a lot of coating where that you go in and instead of having to replace, let's say, a metal roof on a commercial structure.
Okay.
We go in and we rehab it. In other words, you clean it and you might put rust inhibitor on it and then you coat it and you restore that roof and you can put any color you want to on it.
Right.
And that coating can last anywhere from 10 to 20 years.
Right.
And so you don't have to, you know, you don't have to replace that metal roof. You coat that metal roof.
And there would be somebody, not that I'm, you know, talking down the competition, there would be somebody who would simply buy the coating.
Oh, yes.
And slop it on.
Oh, yes. Some people will go to, let's say, one of the big box stores and try to coat something. And really the key, it's like you painting or me painting. They think that the painting part of it is the key. It's really not that. It's all the prep that you do. That's what's making it watertight. That's what's solving the problem. So that metal roof might be leaking. You go in and you do all the seams and all the fasteners and you put down a product. And we're using stuff that working with manufacturers that are going to warrant and back us up.
Yes.
And we're going to give that warranty to that, you know, building owner or to that company that we're working for, whoever we're working with. It might be a property management company, but we're giving a warranty saying, and they have an option to look at 10 years, 15 years, or 20 years. And after that, let's just say they went with the 15-year warranty.
Yeah.
After 15 years, we can come right back and coat it again.
Really?
Yes, and extend the warranty on it. We don't have to, you know, that's the beauty of putting the coating on.
Yeah.
And so,
it's an almost, I mean, you're talking about 15 years. To me, that's a short window.
Right.
But you're talking about something that doesn't have, you don't have to do the whole process again, do you?
No, you don't have to do the whole process, but the other beauty of that is you're talking about putting on, if you did it again, you're getting, let's just say you did it a second time, that's 30 years, and the cost in that is minimal to putting, tearing it off and putting a brand new roof on.
Sure, sure. So. Now, and we should make the point, there's commercial areas of your company.
Right.
There are... you know, we just talked about the flat roofs. You do all these specialty roof jobs. I mean, you just talked about, did you talk about slate? Is that what it was?
No, that was clay tile.
Clay tile.
We do slate as well.
Okay.
But, you know, clay tile and slate are the most, I would say, the most difficult as far as installation. You have to have the highest skill guys putting that on.
Right.
It's the slowest because, you know, instead of a shingle, you're putting on something that's, you know, a lot easier, it doesn't mean that you don't have to have skill. You need skill to put it on, but with slate and tile, there's a lot of cutting and it goes one piece at a time.
Yeah, and they're small pieces relatively,
and they're heavy.
Well, they are.
Oh, yeah. Very heavy.
You want it. The whole asphalt shingles category is heavy. And is it true that they've become heavier over the years?
Lighter.
They become lighter?
Lighter, yes.
Okay, so an architectural shingle is lighter, but is it thicker than what, you know, the three-tab shingle used to be?
Really, most manufacturers have continually put less asphalt in their shingles.
Oh, they have.
Yeah. And, you know, you hear the term organic, meaning that the shingle was mainly asphalt with felt paper in.
Okay.
In it. But now, you know, the invention of the fiberglass mat, you could put less asphalt in a shingle.
Yeah.
So the shingles aren't as heavy with asphalt because they're more durable because of that fiberglass mat.
Yeah.
So that, and some companies use a lot more filler in their shingle, which makes it even Less?
No, wait a minute. Is that a bad thing?
Yeah.
They're filling it with what? Just running, scraps, sawdust?
We won't get into what they're filling it in with, but that's why still the heaviest shingle, like if you go into your standard, what I would say is the beginner shingle, which is the architectural shingles.
Sure.
Three tabs have sort of become, they used to be the standard.
You're not buying that now.
No. So the architectural standard shingle, still the heaviest shingle on the market, is CertainTeed's.
It is.
Yeah. And their landmark shingle. And people will try to make arguments on that, but it truly is the more durable, heavier shingle.
All right. Derwin Maness of Roofworks is here. You've got a showroom. Please tell us the address.
5413 Hillsborough Street in Raleigh, right down from the fairgrounds.
And you can walk in and put your hand on the shingle that you are ordering or that you would like on your house.
Yes, you can. You can see any shingle that you want to, designer shingle, like I talked about the architectural shingles.
Right. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Time for news on FM 98.5 WPTF. Making your home great on WPTF, FM 98.5, AM 680 WPTF. And Derwin Maness of Roofworks is here. Tell me about another project.
Well, another sort of exciting project, this product runs in cycles. We will go probably 4 or 5 months and nobody will deal or want cedar shakes. And all of a sudden we'll be doing quite a few cedar shake jobs.
Wow.
And cedar shakes they're unique. They're very pretty on a roof.
Yeah.
And so this particular project we're doing is, we call them heavy. That means they're 3/4 inch. They're just thicker cedar shakes.
Yeah.
They look better. They last longer. And we're doing this one residential project with, we call it heavy cedar shakes. And the customer's also getting copper gutters. And they have a little cupola as well that we made in the shop for it. A nice little copper design cupola to it.
Oh, wow.
So all of it's just with that. Copper with cedar is just such a nice look.
Yeah.
And it's all, and they went back and forth on it, whether they wanted to go with half round copper and half round the name and round downspouts. Because I know you've seen the round downspouts.
Yeah.
That's a really nice look to it.
Yes.
And so they decided against the half round and they went with the traditional gutters, which are K-style gutters, which you probably have on your house.
Yeah, probably.
And we did that with our guys through our machine and ran K-style copper gutters, which is a really nice look in the 6-inch copper gutters.
Yeah.
And it really pops with that cedar. And, of course, we did the shop-made valleys, the copper valleys, the real open look to it.
Right.
And it's just a good look. And so once that went on that house, Ted, our sales guy, wound up having more customers in that neighborhood saying they wanted cedar. So it seems like that cedar became more of a thing. And all of a sudden you got more people saying, hey, I want cedar.
Wow.
And cedar is, if it's done right, it will last. It's not, people say, well, do I have problems with cedar? You definitely have to do the installation correctly with cedar.
Sure.
And, 9 out of 10 cedar roofs that you see on houses that were put on 20-plus years ago weren't installed correctly.
They were not.
They were not. And it really wasn't the fault of the people that installed it. It's because the North Carolina Building Code wouldn't allow you to install it any other way. They wanted it directly to the deck, and there wasn't any. The only thing you could have done was put it on battens and let it set up on those battens off of the roof deck to give it space for them to breathe.
Okay.
Because cedar is wood, obviously, and wood to wood, it stays moist. So they've come out with a product since that time called Cedar Breather. And you put that Cedar Breather down between the wood deck and the shakes. And that's, to describe it to you, it's almost like a SOS pad type material.
Wow.
And spaces a little bit between it. So it allows a little bit of airflow, a little bit of spacing there to allow that cedar knot to have some airflow to dry.
And see, most people wouldn't know that cedar's got to have an airflow below it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's counterproductive to me, counterintuitive. I'm thinking wood to wood is, hey, that's a good seal, but it's not.
Now, you're getting you lap, when you put cedar on, you put the felt in between the laps anyway, so
yes.
You're giving, that's your sealant there.
Yes.
So that other wood to wood was the problem of the moisture.
Wow.
And you didn't, and it just rotted.
Right.
And deteriorated quicker.
Right.
Out west it didn't matter because the air's so dry, but we're so humid and moist here.
Right, we are, I know.
Yeah. So.
I figured out, Yes, I noticed that the other day when I was outside. We've got a different environment. Does that affect the companies who manufacture the shingles? Do they say, well, okay, we're selling to the southeast as opposed to the southwest?
It does, and we encourage homeowners. Some want the natural. They don't want it treated, but we try to encourage them to go with a treated cedar.
Yes.
So it just like you would go to Lowe's or somewhere and buy treated lumber.
Yeah.
Are you building a deck and you get treated wood for it? It's the same thing. You're getting treated cedar. So it has sort of a greenish look to it.
And do you need to maintain it with some sort of sealer again and again?
Not initially. Down the road, cedar needs to be, at least you need to get that roof cleaned. You don't need to allow, just like we talk about cleaning the shingle roof of debris, you don't need debris staying on a cedar roof, because if you got pine straw and leaves sitting on that, it's going to really deteriorate it quick.
All right. Now, this is the part of the company that I tell Holly, you're just wasting your time with this. This is not worth it. You guys will go and clean gutters. I saw on a map on your website a year ago, you went to Creedmoor to clean some lady's gutters. And you do these small jobs, these little repair jobs. I got one shingle that's not parallel with the rest of them. And you're going 30 miles away. Why are you doing that?
Why do you think we do it?
There's the guy on one shoulder saying, well, they do that because they want to do a service and it would be nice to meet Mrs. Johnson. And then the guy on the other shoulder is saying, no, they just want to get up on the roof and look at it. And maybe there's some problems and gosh, Derwin's gonna make some money on it.
Well, I think the first thing you said, we probably want to meet Miss Johnson.
Yeah.
Maybe she's nice. Maybe she's not nice.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe we turn her into being nicer because we treat her good. But here's the reality. If we go out and take care of Miss Johnson,
yes,
as small as that repair might be, hopefully she says good things about us. And hopefully she becomes a customer for life.
Yes.
Hopefully she has more issues down the road. Hopefully she doesn't have a lot of issues. But if she needs a roof replaced, she's going to call us.
Everybody eventually is going to have something go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, if we treat her good and we do what we say we're going to do, then she's going to tell people and they're going to need things done. That's what repair's about. And repair's about, going out and looking at it and saying, just like I told you the story about my neighbor, we went out and we told him his roof didn't need to be replaced.
Yes.
So if we, instead of telling him we got to replace it right away, if we go out and say, no, it doesn't need to be replaced, here's a few maintenance items we can take care of for you right now and extend the life of this roof, most people feel good about that. Most people say, that's honest.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to be, and we want to extend somebody's roof, and then when it's time to replace it. Now, sometimes it doesn't work that way. Sometimes people move out.
Yeah, they forget about you.
Yeah, and somebody moves in.
Yeah.
And you don't, but for the most part, it works pretty well because that's what Will and myself have built the company from the very first stages in that we wanted to always do repair. Yes, we wanted to build the other facets of the company, but we wanted to build a repair department both in residential and then commercial because if you're able to do repair work for people, you're able to sell them on the fact that we can take care of any problem you're going to have in the roofing business.
Right.
And so if we can re-roof your property, your commercial property, your residential property, and you have an issue, we have employees that can come out and take care of it.
There is also the fact that if you are examining Mrs. something or other, I've forgotten what her name is.
Johnson.
Mrs. Johnson. We go to see Mrs. Johnson, and we discover she has no gutters at all.
Right.
And she's been battling water in her basement for decades. So I don't know what's going on. It's just, you know, honestly, I've got too much water in my basement. You can advise her on a way to fix that. And if the soffit or fascia are almost torn off because of rotting wood, you can take care of that.
Yes, we can. And that is, you're exactly right. If you go and you do repair work, a lot of the time you find, if she's called us about one issue, a lot of the times we do look at the entire roof.
Yeah.
And we say, there's also this and this.
Yeah.
And we give that homeowner pictures and we say, we recommend this.
Right.
But by giving them the pictures, we're not just pushing stuff. We're saying, this is the problem and you can see it right here.
Right. And downspouts and gutters are required in North Carolina. I mean, not by code, but by realistic expectations.
Yeah, there's very few houses. Some houses are built, they've got tremendous overhang and they got the French drains.
Yeah.
That's rare.
Yeah.
Everybody needs gutters and downspouts
and
to get water away from their house.
And that's, it's funny because it involves almost the rest of the crew here on Making Your Home Great.
It does.
That, you know, Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier goes underneath houses where there's poor drainage. And he says, you know, I could do something about this. I could encapsulate this. But I think you need to talk to RoofWorks and get a decent gutter system on here.
Right.
And Craig, the floor guy, runs into houses where the water is, you know, there's standing water under the house or just a high moisture under the house. He says, I can't put brand new hardwood on this because it's just going to ruin itself over a certain period of time.
Right.
So your gutters in the downspout, very important. All right. We'll talk more with Derwin. Excuse me. We'll talk more with Derwin Manis of RoofWorks. On Making Your Home Great. By the way, hour two of this radio program does feature Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier. That's coming up next on WPTF. FM 98.5 AM 680 WPTF. This is Making Your Home with Derwin Manis of RoofWorks. And I'm Dave Alexander, and my voice has finally changed. I am so excited. All right. Derwin, talk to me about another project.
Well, I'll talk about another interesting project. Now, we don't know if we're going to get this one, but it is it's a geodome. And it's,
okay.
It is out in it's out, I don't even know the little town, so it's outside of Wilson.
Outside of Wilson, all right.
And we're currently the only one involved in it.
Sure.
And it's set vacant for, I think, 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
And if you understand, that's sort of like Very few of them, I haven't come across but two of them in my roofing career.
This is a house.
Yeah, it's a house, but, you know, it's that dome, you know.
It looks like, a deflated basketball, you know, just
yes.
kind of stuck
yes.
there in the, wow.
And so the person that's bought it hasn't moved here yet, but they won't. So what we will have to do is we have to initially go in and patch it everywhere.
Yes.
And then coat it. And so it's very unique. That's just a totally off-the-radar type project.
Right.
And so as of now, I'm not going to say that we are definitely doing it, but it's about as unique a project as we can deal with.
So I guess the lesson of this segment is if you've got a nutty project, if you've got a, guess you'll never do this kind of project, called Derwin.
Yeah, call us. We can tackle it. But that's very unique, yeah, in that sense, because it was almost borderline where nobody really wanted to mess with it because of the patching. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's structurally sound, I assume.
It's close.
All right, I got a house like that. That would be great. You know, you get into unusual projects. You did the copper on the New Bern. What is it?
We did on the federal courthouse in New Bern.
Federal courthouse.
Yes.
Now, when you put copper up like that, do you treat it so it always looks shiny and copper, or do you let it go to patina, you know, the way of the Statue of Liberty?
Well, in that one, no, we did not treat it. Very rarely do we treat it, and that would always be unless in a situation, sometimes a homeowner will want it to stay copper.
Yeah.
Which I personally don't like. I like it to be natural and let it turn on its own.
Yeah.
But if you do that, you have to, obviously, you have to buy it out of the from the start that way, and it's treated. It's almost like a, for lack of a better term, a lacquer that is put on the copper.
Right.
So it won't turn. Now, eventually, that will wear off, and that copper will turn. If you've seen, and then you can also buy metal that, and I will tell you, it doesn't look like copper to me, but it's got a copper color, and people will go with that and think, and they'll go with that look. And I've seen people also try this, not a good move.
What's that?
After copper's put on, and they will try to turn it back to the copper look. You know, they'll have it cleaned to look back to the shiny copper. But, you know, I think copper's always best if you just put it on and let it turn.
You can't power wash it and bring it back.
No.
No, okay. No. All right. So if you've got a nutty project, Roofworks will take a look at it.
We'll take a look at it. I won't guarantee you that we'll do it, but we'll take a look at it.
You don't walk away from a lot of challenges, do you?
No. I mean, if it's worth the challenge and we can do it, we'll do it. But, you know, the courthouse, that was a tremendous project. It was great there at New Bern. That was a very – and it took a lot of skill. We had John Strickland – handled that project from start to finish, and it was a beautiful finished job, but it took a lot of time and a lot of effort.
Holly told me that you had to put essentially the manufacturing for the copper up on the roof. You had to form it and cut it there.
Yeah, that made the most sense. So in other words, we sort of created a workstation there on site.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
Well, I would like a copper roof. I would like copper channels and valleys and things like this.
Well, we can help you out.
Yes, I've just got to steal enough traffic lights to take to the company, right? Take to the recycler so that I can I can afford it. Derwin Manus of Roofworks is here. Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier is also here. Are you here? Oh, he's not here. Oh, there he is.
I just slide over.
Yeah, we got to get Brock on. Brock, where have you been?
I've been out of the country for the last, about 3.5 weeks, enjoying some time in Ireland.
And you spent your time in Ireland, no kidding, looking at roofs.
Yeah, well, you know, it drove my family a little crazy, but...
You were looking at home improvement and
I was looking at everything. You know, when you're given an opportunity to go to another country and you do what we do for a living, your eyes have a tendency to trace around and say, how did they build this? How did they do this? What kind of materials were they using? And very different from what I think we're all used to seeing. So it was a big learning experience seeing how they do things over there.
You came across a lot of thatched roofs.
Yeah, roofs shockingly like amount. Slate is the most common. That's also a very expensive roofing material because it's designed to last for a very long period of time.
Yeah.
And the weather that they get over there makes a lot of sense. But I was very caught off guard driving around Ireland, and I realized that probably 1 out of 5, 1 out of 10 at worst were thatch roofs, kind of like sticks and grass, which you would see up there. And it really caught me off guard because that's not something we see anywhere around here. Those buildings are long since gone or have had those roofs pulled off and redone with something else. So,
right.
Luckily for me, I ran into a local engineer that was there in a pub. So I had a nice long conversation with her and her husband about how they do these roofs. And they told me there's only 4 or 5 guys in the entire country that do those roofs. And I said, well, what's the reasoning behind it? I mean, a slate is going to last a lot longer. And they said, well, you know, that's old school. That's there's symbolism behind that. There, you know, people want that look. So it was interesting and unique to see, to say the least.
All right, good. We'll talk more in the second hour about that. Derwin, the showroom. You got a showroom. First of all, most roofers don't seem to. Why do you have a showroom?
We do. We don't have any thatch in the showroom, but now that Brock's back, maybe he's on to an idea here. That would be an inexpensive roofing product. I just don't know that we could get people to install it.
It would be hard to convince them, I think.
Yeah. It's basically grass.
Yeah.
And sticks. You can grow the roof.
We could get that
and
going.
Mud and clay, it's it's a very old school way of going about it.
Well, we do. As I mentioned earlier, the showroom, I think for anybody that is looking, has made a decision, hey, I want to put a certain product on. It's nice to come, put your hands on it, and then compare it to other things. They can look at stand and seam. They can look at slate. They can look at a piece of tile. But you know, sometimes that changes what their thought process was because – you know, if you see the tile or you see the slate or you see the shingle and then you see maybe a designer shingle.
Yes.
And you realize, hey, I'm interested in that, you know, and the showroom just gets, maybe it's a kickoff for them. And then we can direct them to houses to go look at. I like them to go look at it on a house.
Yeah.
If at all possible, let's go look at it, you know, and see it, you know, totally installed. That's a nice thing to see as well.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I had a insurance job at one point long before I knew about you guys, and that's what they did. They gave me an address for this is what it's going to look like. Seeing it in the showroom is very important, though. Mm-hmm. Putting your hands on it and having the multiple options, not just on a nice slick, you know, multicolor folder.
Right.
Which is what a lot of roofers do. Here's my folder. Take a look at it.
And then we put it on the big screen television and pull certain jobs up to show the difference, compare and contrast for them.
Very
too,
good.
As well.
Your address and your website.
We're 5413 Hillsborough Street, Raleigh, right below the fairgrounds.
And RoofWorks is spelled with WERKS at the end. So
yes.
RoofWorks.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Derwin Maness from Roofworks. I got Brock Emmons coming up next on WPTF.
Boeing is for information purposes only and does not necessarily represent the views and opinions of News Radio 680 WPTF and the Curtis Media Group.
FM 98.5 AM 680 WPTF, making your home great with world traveler Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier. So we didn't tell before you left, because I don't like on Facebook, you know, say, well, we're going to be out of town for the next
three weeks. Right.
So we didn't tell that Brock was going to be gone. But you went to Ireland.
Ireland, yeah. It was a few years in the making. You know, it's one of those lifelong trips that you plan out. We were there 3.5 weeks. I rented a car. We drove the entire southern part of Ireland, Doolin, Dingle. There is a Dingle, believe it or not.
There's a place called Dingle?
Yeah, Dingle, Ireland.
Did you get a T-shirt, at least?
Well, I got a few things.
Yeah. I went to Dingle.
That's right.
And all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
Yeah, saw the Cliffs of Moher, and so it was a great trip. A lot of good food. Yeah. Very strange way of driving, but you know, it took me a week or so. Very stressful the first part of the trip, making sure I didn't mess up.
They do drive on the opposite side.
Yeah, you know, that wasn't really the hard part.
No.
You know, I thought it would be. I was doing research before we left for months, you know, how to drive in Ireland on the left side of the road, and picked that up pretty quickly. I think the difficult part that a lot of people don't understand is the majority of the roads are two-lane, okay? There's no shoulder on your left or your right. So they're very small roads. There's no shoulder, so no room for mistakes.
Right.
And on each side of the road, there's a 5 or a 6 foot hedge built by rocks that are full of grass and flowers and everything. So you can't, because there's no straight roads, every corner is a blind corner. Every corner. So yeah, high stress. It was very stressful. I had my family in the car with me, so you know, I drew the short straw, had to drive the whole time.
Yeah.
But after about a week or so, I felt pretty confident and was able to kind of relax a little bit and enjoy
the
trip.
You didn't drive as fast as the locals wanted you to.
You're going to laugh when I never in my life have I ever, ever been on a road, looked at a speed limit and said, that's too high.
Yeah.
I did that on nearly every road I was there. It said, oh, speed limit's 80 kilometers an hour. I'm going 50 and I'm stressed. So, Yeah, the locals had no problem taking those corners at, you know, 70 miles an hour blind corner, and I couldn't do it.
Well, they knew there wasn't an intersection coming up.
But you know, they didn't know there wasn't a dumb American coming around the corner.
That's right.
You never know. Everything went smoothly. Got to see a lot of beautiful places. Saw a lot of very interesting architecture and you know, how they design these things, how they build them. So
you needed to study some. Didn't you? You just had to drink a beer with somebody and learn about construction.
Yeah, I figured it was going to be different when the first hotel we went into, we realized there's no plugs in the bathrooms because they run 220 throughout the country. So
really?
That's a lot of electricity to have around running water. Here in the States, we have 110s, and most of the time they're GFI protected. So
right.
So there's no outlets in the bathrooms. My poor wife and mother-in-law had to do all their hair out in the room,
yeah.
But they do have bottle openers bolted to the wall in the bathroom, so you can't do your hair, but here is an early morning cocktail. So
here's a Guinness.
It was a hoot, a lot of fun people, interesting food, so had a lot of fun. Happy to be back.
Terrific. All right. Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier. Let's start with the Radiant Barrier. It's a hot day.
Yeah, I came back, and I guess you guys have been dealing with the first part of the summer heat the last few weeks. So I got back into town and saw our schedule is already completely full. We're booked 4 to 5 weeks out.
Wow.
Very, very quickly.
And because of the heat,
right?
You face an issue where you can't work everybody as long as you want to,
yeah,
or as late as you'd want to.
Yeah, we had this discussion earlier this season when I was trying to tell the listeners, look, if you know you want insulation, the cheapest time of the year to get it done is in, you know, November, December, January, and February for a few reasons. Our guys are able to work longer days. We don't pay them by the hour. These guys get paid by the day. So they make a salary per day. Well, in November, we can blow in your entire house and do all the insulation, get it air sealed, and probably have that done in a day.
Right.
This time of year, we're going to have to pull these guys out of the attic around noon or 1 o'clock. That's about as late in the day. So now it might turn into a two-day install. So you're paying twice as much in labor as you would have been in the cooler part of the year. Now, we can still do it. And as you can see, we're booked 5-6 weeks out right now. Yeah. So that doesn't slow anybody down. When they realize they want it, they want it.
And for those who are trying to do the math and say, all right, is he being fair to people by paying them by the day? Sure. Sometimes those days are 6 hours. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get paid like that.
Well, you know, I've had customers bring that up in the past, and they're like, you know, why don't you pay your guys by the hour? But in the same breath,
no,
they'll say about how impressed they were with our guys' quality.
Yeah.
And I'll tell them, look, I can hire 15 guys at $20 an hour, work them 40 hours a week. They're making $800. The quality is not going to look like this because those guys don't take pride in what they do.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that we have are very good at what they do. They take pride in their job. They want to make sure it looks good. It's kind of like the mechanic who can fix your car in an hour or one that's going to take a week.
Yeah.
As long as it's done right, I'd rather have the guy that can do it in an hour than the guy that's going to take a week.
Okay.
That's my guys. We're very good. That's one of the reasons that we do not collect payment till the work is completed, and one of the owners is going to come out to inspect it before we collect that payment. So we ensure that you're going to get what you pay for.
That's very good. So you go out on jobs and you inspect what's been done.
Yes, sometimes. That was my primary job for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Since then, I've kind of broken off and I focus more on the commercial side of the company now. So I deal primarily with building relationships with other contractors and working the commercial side of the company. But one of the three owners is always going to do the final inspection.
When you say commercial end, does that mean interfacing with people who are building houses?
Yes. The commercial side, from our standpoint, we work with several builders. So people that are contracted by homeowners to come out and build them a property will come out and do the insulation or seal the crawl space in those properties.
Yes.
I work with roofers. Roofworks is one of them, obviously. We work with solar companies that bring us in to do insulation packages with their solar packages.
Right.
So it's really about building relationships on the commercial side, working very well with other companies and trying to build a cohesive unit.
All right. For those who have considered solar, I want Brock to explain why you should consider insulation and solar together.
Right.
Because?
So solar and insulation, they kind of fight the same problem from a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's say we're dealing with your home in its current condition.
Yes.
You've got 10 inches of insulation in your attic. Your average usage each month is 1,200 kilowatt hours.
Okay.
Okay? Or we'll say 1,000 kilowatt hours just to round the numbers down.
Okay.
Okay, a solar company is going to come in and say, okay, you're averaging 1,000 kilowatt hours a month. You need this many panels to compensate for that usage. Okay?
All right.
The insulation side. Adding insulation to your property drops the kilowatt usage.
Yes.
So when you're better insulated, the air conditioner is kicking on 5 or 6 times a day less than it was before you were insulated. So your usage comes down.
Yeah.
So a lot of these solar companies have figured out, okay, well, these solar panels are $3,000 or $4,000 a panel, and this customer needs 10.
Yeah.
So they're out $30,000 or $40,000. Or we bring in an insulation company, they install a high grade radiant barrier in the attic.
Yeah.
We drop the usage by 30%. Now they don't need 10 panels. They need 7. So we've cut three panels off of the usage at $3,000 a panel. That's $9,000. Right. But it only cost them $2,700 to have us come in and insulate it.
Wow.
So a lot of these solar companies are wising up and realizing, look, we can actually offer insulation, drop the usage, drop the amount we have to charge the customer, and sell higher volume.
Yeah.
So that's my job now, is I'm reaching out, talking with these solar companies, roofing companies, flooring companies, anybody that kind of works in the same area that we work in, and say, hey, we'd love to help. We'd love to be your insulation company. Love to seal your crawl spaces for you, remediate mold for you. We're insured to do that. So just building relationships with other contractors.
And let me just tell you, if you are in a pickle, and you say, well, I need somebody who can do this one specific thing on my house.
Mm-hmm.
Please call Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier during this radio show, and he'll find somebody. He is Mr. Network.
That's, yes. I have a large network of contractors that I work with.
And because you've seen their work, you know who to go.
And vice versa.
Right.
They send us business a lot.
All right. Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier is... instead of being co-host, he is the guest for today. Our telephone number is 919-860-9783. 919. Double-check me on this because I've been doing it wrong lately.
Sounded good.
919-860-9783 on Making Your Home Great, FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF. FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, News, Talk, Traffic, and Making Your Home Great. Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier is in the hot seat. And next week, who do we have coming in?
Well, I just got wind that it'll be Chris Massey with Massey Plumbing, which I'm pretty excited about. You know, the listeners on the show who have been listening for quite some time know that we really have not had a plumber.
Right.
On here. We've had one or two guys that have come in and done an episode or two, and then that was that. And,
yes.
And there's so many people out there that have plumbing questions and concerns, so we've been trying for a while to find a good, reputable plumber to get on the show.
Yeah.
And Chris is my guy. He's the one that just replaced the entire home water filtration system, acid reduction, water softener system at my place. And his guys were, boy, they were knowledgeable.
You had an issue where appliances were failing.
Yeah.
Because of the quality of the water?
We didn't know at the time, but yes. We figured it out when the shower head snapped out of the wall in the shower.
We've got
a his and her shower head, and my, you know, meek little wife reached up to adjust the shower head and didn't know her own strength and pulled it right out of the wall.
Wow.
So, no, that was around the time we were like, maybe we have a bigger issue here. So I had reached out and had a couple of plumbers come out, and they were like, oh, yeah, you know, all you got to do is this. Oh, yeah, all you got to do is that. And I wasn't overly confident with the information they were giving me.
Yeah.
So I reached out to somebody I respect in the industry, Eddie Casnave, if he's listening. And said, Eddie, I need a plumber that's got some gray hair, man. You need to send me a veteran. I need somebody. This is not his first rodeo.
Yeah, yeah.
And he hooked me up with Chris and Chris's guys, and they came out and in the first hour said, I'm pretty sure you have high acid content, but we're going to bring out our tester, the guy that specializes in this, to verify before I sell you anything.
Right.
Like, already you're ahead of everybody else. They were ready to have me sign a contract. On, you know, before they left, and none of them knew it was high acid content.
Right.
So they did the work while I was in Ireland, came back, and everything just absolutely looks beautiful.
That's good.
And I got him in contact with Mike here at the show, so we're pretty excited. I think he'll be coming on next weekend, and hopefully we'll have a long time running plumber on the show, which we need.
That's good. We do. You know, and in fact, if you're a contractor, and you're not butting heads against, for instance, Brock Emmons. If you're not an insulation person, if you're not a crawl space sealer,
We're always looking for people in different categories.
Yeah.
The electricians out there, okay?
Yes.
You know, if you own your own electrical company, you're an electrician.
Yep.
We're always looking to bring an electrician on the show. Any category, we don't have somebody that fills that category.
Right.
We are always open to try to get some new blood on the show. So please reach out to us at WPTF.
Yeah. And by the way, we are going to vet you in a certain way.
That's right.
You got a bunch of buddies. And you're going to pick up the phone and say, is this guy any good? Have you come in after he or she did this work?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to make sure. Because we're not going to have somebody in the studio who we don't think is all right.
Mike does a great job vetting these companies.
That's good. That's good. All right. Brock Emmons, Triangle Radiant Barrier. We've been talking about the Radiant Barrier.
Right.
It is a rolled product.
Yep, reflective grade.
It's like a blanket.
It can be, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of different types. People think radiant barrier, no, it's a roll out. Some are board. Some are the old school products were a spray paint. They'd get in there and
really?
It was an IRCC coating paint, reflective grade paint. They'd paint the bottom of the roof deck with and. You know, that's going back a ways. That was really big with one of the big box stores about 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
But everybody figured out it didn't work. So it's back to using the actual radiant barrier products. But we carry a lot of different products that do a lot of different things. They're all radiant barrier.
Right.
But they're designed for different types of installs.
Now, if somebody has a bonus room,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they're looking at the roof deck. They've got, you know, they can see straight through to it. Nobody put any insulation in there because it wasn't considered
living space.
A living space.
Right.
All right. You would suggest what for that kind of project?
So we run into those a lot. Attic conversions. You know, you have a section of your attic you want to convert into a living space.
Yes.
When you're doing an attic conversion or new construction, we're bound by code.
Right,
because there is going to be a code inspector that comes out there, and he's going to inspect the framing, the plumbing, the electrical, the insulation. So in North Carolina, you essentially have three options, is what it boils down to, unless you're doing any major framing, metal framing, in which you could use a foam board of some kind. But the majority of them are standard fiberglass,
yes,
a combination of fiberglass and radiant barrier.
All right.
Or you go to the top of the mountain, which is spray foam.
And you say it's the top of the mountain. It's got to be more expensive.
Grossly more expensive, yes. Spray foam is definitely not the cheapest.
Okay.
It does produce the best impact.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, people are always asking about R value. What is the R value? The R value of spray foam is kind of irrelevant if it's sprayed. Because it's air sealing the space.
Okay.
So, for example, if you had a shed in the middle of a field.
Yes.
There's no trees around. It's getting cooked by the sun.
Yes.
90 degrees outside. There's no windows in that shed. You're going to go in that shed. It's going to be 130 degrees.
Okay.
Okay. You do R20 insulation in that shed, batted fiberglass insulation. It's going to be 115. Now, if you go in there,
5 degrees out of this.
If you go in there and you put in 3 inches of spray foam,
yeah,
that's only R15.
Okay,
it's going to be 90 degrees in that shed.
Well, that's good.
See, the R value didn't matter. The R value of the foam. It's why the foam is less R value than the batted insulation you just put in. Why is it 15 to 20 degrees cooler?
Yeah,
the R value is irrelevant. It air sealed it. Okay, so it air seals the space.
Okay.
So it is very expensive. The cost of the material is very expensive.
Yeah.
And in most cases, the combination of radiant barrier and fiberglass in that same shed might be 5 or 6 degrees warmer than the spray foam. But the spray foam was double the cost.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, my job when I'm talking to homeowners is these are your three options. We can just do standard insulation. We can do a combination of insulation and radiant barrier, or you go straight to the top of the mountain and go with an open cell spray foam, and then answer their questions.
So generally, in order to meet code,
minimum of fiberglass.
You need to put the fiberglass in.
Correct.
And there's no going around it. No. I mean, you do the spray foam, you get the same, you know, break on the code.
Correct.
You match the code, but if you're going to put radiant barrier and rolled batted insulation, mm-hmm. fiberglass, you're going to end up doing them both together.
Yes.
Okay.
And the knock on the foam, okay, mm-hmm. is code in North Carolina is R30 for mm-hmm. spray foam.
Okay.
R30 is what we do in attics in Wisconsin, where it's 7 degrees outside and there's 6 feet of snow.
Yeah.
R30 is super overkill for North Carolina, but that is the code.
Yeah.
So one of the driving factors on why spray foam is so expensive is they want you to blow it at the same depth that we do across the northern border.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that code ever changes and they realize R30 is not necessary with a spray foam, if they drop that down to an R20, which is, by the way, what we did for decades before they changed the code to R30.
Okay.
And no one who ever had spray foam complained about high utility bills.
Hmm.
So it is very expensive, and we have to blow it in to certain depths, which also drive the cost up.
Yeah. So you're just following what is code, but you know that code is not always. Sometimes it's illogical.
Sometimes it's very logical.
Yeah.
You know, the code in the walls, perfect. Code for insulation on the floor of the attic is R38. That is completely understandable. We have hot climates here. But there are some codes that, yes, you're like, what? What? I don't. Why? What right. is. Walk me through that.
And we can also talk about the fact that your industry is. You're inspected, but you're not. Like registered, like you've got to get a license.
Right. No. We are inspected with new construction because Ooh. That is when there's a building permit that's been pulled.
Right.
So when there's a building permit, yes, that's included. But existing home, there is no inspection from the city.
Okay. All right. We'll talk with Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier about insulation. Then we'll go underneath the crawl space in just a moment. Down on WPTF. FM 98.5, AM 680, WPTF, making your home great. I want to ask a question of Brock Emmons. By the way, ask him about his trip to Ireland.
I'll be glad to tell you about it.
Sure, you know, what it's like to drive on essentially the wrong side of the road. By the way, the Brits have already answered why they drive on the wrong side of the road.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, well, they said, we'll change when everybody else does. We'll go ahead and do that. But, you know, ask him any home construction questions. We've been talking about the attic. Even though you sell one more attic job, those people working for you are going to lose their minds because it's so hot.
It gets pretty warm.
The real temperature, ambient temperature, the air temperature in the attic is what?
Right now, when it's 90 degrees outside,
sure.
North of 125. Typically, if you have good ventilation, 120 to 125.
Yeah.
If you don't have good ventilation, 135 to 150.
Now, I think this is weird. I have a connected garage.
Okay.
When I say connected, the attic access is in the garage.
For the whole house?
For the whole house.
Okay. Right.
You know, the only way to get to the attic. And then, of course, it's a straight shot from living area
sure.
or below above living area to above the garage.
There's no insulation above that garage.
I don't think so.
Right.
No. And there's nothing to separate one area from the other.
No. The whole attic's going to be the same temperature. Above the garage, above the living space. The insulation on the floor is not going to impact that.
Right. They insulated above my living area.
I hope so. Yes.
I don't think they insulated above my garage.
No. No. Most don't. You know, it's not living space. And we've said on the show before that insulation without HVAC
right.
is about as useless as HVAC without insulation. Okay, so you have to have both.
Okay.
If we insulate an area but there's no air conditioner, you're never going to get it cooler in that area than it is outside.
Okay.
Right? So they know, the people, the builders, people that are writing codes, they know that your garage is not conditioned. You don't have any HVAC out there. You're not blowing heat in there in the winter. You're not blowing cool air in there in the summer.
Right.
So there's no reason to insulate it because there's no temperature you're trying to keep in or keep out.
Yeah.
Now, if you ever do install a mini split or you put conditioning in your garage, that's when you would want to go up there and insulate. Do not insulate your garage unless you plan on running conditioning. It will be a waste of your money. It might be 95 in there right now with no insulation, and you blow a bunch of insulation in, and now it's 90.
Yeah, not
so
not
it didn't really justify the cost. But if you put an air conditioner in there, now you can get it down into the 70s with that insulation.
Well, that's a good thing.
So don't, if you're thinking about insulating your garage because you think it's going to cool it down, just remember it's never going to cool it down cooler than it is outside without blowing colder air in that space.
I guess I'm not smart enough or experienced enough, probably not smart enough, not smart enough to understand why they insulated my attic above the living space, and then several feet in the other direction, they didn't insulate above my garage, but I can see both places from each other.
Why not? Typically due to ventilation. So sometimes I've been in houses where they've built a retention wall between the garage attic and the main attic because they wanted to foam seal it.
Okay.
So they built a wall up right there so they could foam seal the part of the attic that's above the living space, but then they didn't have to incur the funds to then foam seal the attic above the garage.
Makes sense.
So there are ways that you can do it, but yes, the majority of homes, you do not insulate over the garage because it really is a waste of your money unless you're going to condition it.
And they put drywall up, and my guess is there's no insulation around the garage.
Most of the walls, no. The only wall that's going to be insulated is the wall that separates your garage from your kitchen or your mud room or, you know, your dining room. Whatever that wall is that separates the living space from the garage, that one's insulated. But none of the other walls of the garage are insulated.
That makes sense. That's why it's 1,000 degrees in my garage.
It can get very hot, very cold.
It can. So you also work with RoofWorks on ventilating attics.
That's right.
Because of the floor, because of the, not flooring, but the shingles and the issue with getting warranty on a shingle or even long life from a shingle.
Or better use of how your insulation is working.
Yeah.
I put it like, picture the stove. Right? Yeah. You're cooking something in the stove. You've got it on 350 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
But now open that door 4 inches.
Yeah.
And you're going to see that 350 degrees or your grill, right? As soon as you lift the lid on that, the temperature just drops off the mat because you're ventilating that heat out.
Right.
So in an attic, you could have 4 feet of insulation up there. I mean, to the point where it's like you're walking through a snowstorm.
Yeah.
But if there's no ventilation and that attic is 150 degrees, eventually that insulation is going to absorb as much heat as it can, and it's going to get heat soaked, and that heat's going to transfer through it like it's Swiss cheese. So it's still going to get very warm in your home. That 4 feet of insulation didn't do the trick. But you add really good attic ventilation, a place for that heat to get out. I'm a big fan of ridge vents. I know RoofWorks are big fans of ridge vent. There's no moving parts. As long as it is a roof that's applicable to have one installed, that's what we recommend. But if you have a gable roof or a hip roof or something like that where the ridge vents are very small and not adequate, that's when we recommend having a solar-powered fan installed, something that's going to suck that heat out at a pretty rapid rate.
And you suggest a solar-powered system. Why?
A couple of reasons. You can go with an electric fan. Electric fans are going to run you about $300 to $350. Then you got to pay an electrician to come out and install it.
Yeah.
So you're going to spend, I don't know, $600-$700 when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
Those motors last 5, 6, 7 years tops. Most of the electric fans we find in attics stopped working several years ago, and now you're incurring the cost, bring an electrician, come back out, disconnect it, hook up a new one,
yes,
and then hold your breath for the next 6 to 7 years.
Right.
The solar fans, they're not counterproductive. You're not using electricity to cool off an attic to save on electricity.
Yes.
But B, they come with 25-year full replacement warranties. So they actually last longer than the electric-powered fans, and they pull higher volume of airflow. The solar fans pull 1,881 cubic feet per minute, and the big electric fans are somewhere in the 14 to 1,600 range. So
right,
they're bigger, they're stronger, they have a better warranty, and there is a federal tax credit this year. So when you get your tax credit back, you ended up spending about $200 more than an electric fan. But you got a better warranty, it's going to work a lot better, and it's you're not using electricity
right
to cool off the attic.
That's pretty impressive. What's impressive to me is that the new product is so much better than the old product.
It's weird, isn't it? Weird to say that.
Aren't you impressed when that happens?
It's shocking. You know, we did lots of research into solar fans when they first came out. We just were not overly impressed.
Yep.
But then these new models came out with their warranties, and I had one put on my house and immediately felt the impact that it made. And we said, okay, well, we'll start selling these. We always test it out on our own properties first.
Really?
My two partners and I. So we've got a bunch of unique stuff around our house.
Where does the cell or the solar part hang or you know, is installed?
Depends on the size of the fan. The 35-watt fans, the solar panel is built into the top of the fan, so it just looks like a turtleback vent.
Okay.
About 16 inches across, circular, so it blends in pretty well. When you start getting up into the bigger fans, you know, the 48 watts, for example, they come with a 16-inch by 18-inch solar panel, which is mounted on the roof next to the fan location.
Yeah.
It's larger, pulls a lot of airflow, but that's, you can see, that's one of the reasons we bring out RoofWorks. If we need them to mount something to a roof, we want to ensure that it's flashed with ice and water shield and that it's warranted from leaks. And RoofWorks warranties the fans that we install from future leaks. So it's been a great relationship with them.
That's a good thing. It's a good thing. All right. So let's imagine that instead of attic issues, I got standing water.
Yep.
I owned a home where the previous owner had installed fans, like school bus fans, underneath the house. And you flick a switch, and we knew that the reason he did this, because it was standing water.
Mm.
He should have gone more seriously, right? Should have done something else.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're looking at cause and effect. The fans, he's trying to drop the humidity in that area so that moisture will dissipate. But you're not actually correcting the moisture issue, getting to the you know, the source. So when we run into homeowners that have standing water issues underneath the home, I'm pretty direct with them. You know, you've got two options. You either fix this with exterior drainage or you fix it with interior drainage.
Right.
You either prevent the water from ever getting in there in the first place, or you pump that water out using proper drainage after it's gotten in.
Right.
And any logical person is going to want to try to stop the water from ever getting in the first place.
Right.
But if you have a beautiful cement patio, cobblestone, you've got a jacuzzi back there, running a French drain under that concrete could cost a fortune. Those customers are normally the ones that say, well, I would rather just do interior drainage. It's going to keep the cost down. Again, our job is educational. We're going to come in and show you what the problem is, give you your 3 or 4 different solutions to fix the problem, make sure you understand each of those options,
right,
and then we stand back and you pick which one you feel is best for your home.
Yeah. My dad's house had a tremendous water problem, partly because he built at the base of a big, long hill.
Yeah.
A big, flat hill. And I remember when I was a kid that we had a what they called the sub pump.
Yep.
And the sub pump, I realize now, probably was a redneck sub pump. The dad probably, because the size of it was about the size of a 5-gallon container.
Right.
And the way it operated, when the water got high enough, it would float a switch. It'd float a bar.
In the pump.
Is that the way they work?
Yeah, there's you know, typically when you're doing an interior sump pump,
yes,
there's a basin. The basin is normally about the size of about half the size of an oil drum.
Yeah.
So you dig a hole in the corner of the crawl space, the low spot corner. That's where all the water is accumulating.
Right.
Then you hook up typically 8 to 15 feet of French drain on each side of that basin. So when you bury that basin, you bury it in the corner of the crawl space.
Yeah.
So then you run 15 feet of French drain up one wall, 15 feet down the other wall.
To collect the other water.
To collect as much water as possible.
Yeah.
You put the sump pump in the basin. You connect a 3-inch corrugated pipe off of that. Mm-hmm. Takes a 90 elbow and it runs outside. So when the water level in that basin gets high, It pulls the float and the pump up, and that kicks the pump on, and it starts pumping that water out.
At Dad's house, it looked like the interior of a toilet.
Yeah.
So
I've seen some very unique installs. You talk about redneck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
This customer was one of my favorite all-time people. He was absolutely hysterical. He was a do-it-yourselfer.
Right.
And he told me before I got in the crawl space, he said, we've had water issues under this house for years. I came up with a solution that's worked very well for the last few years, but now I want it done right.
Yes.
I said, okay, no problem. I'll get down there and take a look. What he had done is he had taken about a 5 to 6 gallon Home Depot bucket, drilled holes in it, dug a hole, wrapped it in what are the pantyhose made out of?
Nylon.
Wrapped it in nylon, put the pump down there, connected a garden hose to it.
Oh, yeah.
And then ran the garden hose through the vent to get the water outside. And
perfect.
You know what? It worked.
Sure.
I mean, it did the job, and he got a few years of life out of it. But I've seen some unique issues in customers' homes and how they've taken steps to try to correct the problem. It's been fun.
We'll talk about encapsulating wall spaces or subfloors. Encapsulating crawl spaces. Sometimes I remember the rhyming word. Encapsulating crawl spaces in just a moment with Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier on FM 98.5 and AM 680 WPTF. FM 98.5, AM 680 WPTF. We had a guy running a charcoal grill down below the studio. We've asked him to stop, and now we've stopped coughing.
Stop coughing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier is here. So I'm going to try to, again, focus on the encapsulated crawl space. I hear about that a lot. A lot of people talking about it, and there are people who probably have no business doing it, are in your business. They're in your category.
They're trying to. Yep.
They're trying. I saw a truck that was for a bug company, and they were promising to encapsulate the crawl space. What does it mean to encapsulate?
Well, encapsulation is essentially sealing your crawl space, insulating the walls of the crawl space, getting the vent sealed from the inside, and conditioning the environment.
It's not building something that keeps the water out.
No.
It's something that keeps the conditioning, the air conditioning in.
Air conditioning or dehumidification.
Okay.
The best way I know how to describe it to people in a way that they'll understand, it's kind of like sealing your crawl space is like putting doors and windows on your house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why do we have doors and windows? Aside from the fact we want to be able to look out them and walk out the door to go outside.
Yes.
But the reason that we have doors and windows is to keep our conditioning in.
Yeah.
You know, if you're running the air conditioner and all your doors and windows are open, it's still 1,000 degrees in your house or freezing in the house if it's the winter time.
And the little spinny thing on the electric box is going, you know, 190 miles
That's
an
hour. You're going to big bills.
Yes.
Encapsulating your crawl space is the same theory. When you seal up the vents, you insulate the walls, you're enclosing the environment. So now it can be conditioned. And per code, you do that with either air induction, which is HVAC, or a dehumidifier. If we don't seal your vents and we're running a dehumidifier down there, it's just going to run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's never going to turn off, use a ton of electricity.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to maintain humidity where we want it, and it's going to fry out in 2 years.
Yeah.
So the dehumidifier is what does all the work. That's the heartbeat. That's the air conditioner of your house. The dehumidifier is what is doing the work. Everything else you do down there, put new plastic on the floor, insulate the walls, get the vents sealed, that's all giving it a better environment for that dehu to do its job, just like putting in doors and windows. Now your air conditioner can do its job.
Right. The air conditioner versus the dehumidifier, it's job by job, I mean home by home, your decision?
Yes. So long story short, when I'm talking with a homeowner, I tell them once the crawl space is encapsulated, we can do option one or option two. Yeah. Option one is air induction. Option two is dehumidification. Well, what's the difference?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Before these sensors came out, okay, these are these little sensors that hook up to your smartphone, and you can monitor temperature and humidity 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it will track that data up to a year. So you can go back and look at it, look at the numbers, find out what is and is not working.
Yeah.
When those came out a few years ago, that's when we really got a good understanding of how this stuff works. Air induction is putting air inducers in your junction boxes in the crawl space. So when you're running your air conditioner or heater, it has a butterfly valve that opens and you start displacing conditioned air into a crawl space. It's only working when the air conditioner is running. When the air conditioner shuts off, humidity spikes very quickly till the air conditioner kicks back on again 20, 30, 45 minutes later, and it starts dropping again.
Right.
Air induction was most common. That's what people have used for many, many years, till we started getting recording data and realized that it was not as efficient as a dehumidifier. Dehumidifier maintains humidity in the 50s, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yes.
Runs like an air conditioner. So when the humidity's high, it kicks on, brings it down, then it shuts off. So it's a high efficiency unit. It doesn't use very much electricity to do its job.
Right.
But now we can guarantee you're not going to have mold growth. I have homeowners that went with air induction, and in May or April, it's so nice outside, they turn their system off and they open all the windows in the house.
Yeah.
Well, your crawl space hasn't seen airflow in 4 days. You've got mold now.
In 4 days?
Oh, I do mold remediation on brand new construction homes that don't even have the drywall in yet.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Mold can happen very quickly. It's how much moisture is in the air. And whether or not there's a surface for mold to grow on.
Right.
Well, if the whole crawl space is built of wood and it's got high humidity down there, yeah, you're going to have mold.
Wow.
So we normally recommend dehu. But if a homeowner wants air induction, it passes code. My job is just to educate them, make sure they understand the pros and the cons, and they make up their own mind.
And we are talking about a dehumidification system for solely the crawl space.
Specifically, these units are designed to be in crawl spaces, so they're bigger units, and they're not so expensive. People are, I hear they're $5,000-$6,000. No, they're not. A big dehumidifier, a big one, an E100, 100 pints a day that we install with electrical, $1,500 to $1,700, give or take, installed.
Oh, yeah.
That's material, labor, everything. But that unit's going to go, I've had mine 10 years. As long as you take good care of them, they're going to last a long time.
Right. I like the options that you present. A lot of people don't need the full encapsulation.
Nope.
What are some of the other things?
You know, if I get into a crawl space and it's 6 feet tall, very rarely do I find a lot of mold in there because the subfloor is so far from the dirt.
Yeah.
you know, I'll tell customers, look, we can encapsulate, but you got big walls in here. If we've got to insulate all these walls, it's going to get very expensive.
Right.
I don't see a lot of mold. You do have a little bit of a humidity issue, so I'd recommend letting us put down new plastic, seal the vents, hook up a dehumidifier, and then monitor it. And if we keep humidity in the 50s, great. You're doing exactly what you would hope to do in a full encapsulation. So each house is different.
Yeah.
It's, you know, these are your options. This is what you can expect. This is what you can't. This is the price. What questions can I answer for you?
And you don't look at a particular neighborhood as if it fits a particular profile.
Not normally. I've been in neighborhoods where five houses on the street were in really bad shape, and the other five, you couldn't find anything wrong. You went in there and do a couple of tweaks, but they were on the other side of the road.
Right.
So.
So you're working with builders now.
Yes.
To convince them, in some cases, and some cases they're already convinced, that you're going to encapsulate first.
Most of my builders build the house to be encapsulated, so there's no vents.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're not even putting vents on the frame of the house because they're building it to be sealed during construction. That's
wow.
Most of the ones that we work with.
Well, Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier. Tell me how to get in touch with you.
Guys, just reach out to us on our website at triangleradiantbarrier.com, or you can call the line at the office at 919-986-8808.
And this is, and we're closing the program now, this is Making Your Home Great on WPTF.